Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Welcome to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Scav.
I want to let the audience know, you know, Scav and I, we've worked together. We share information back and forth.
I run Scout as my service dog. He's a hearing dog, PTSD dog.
We're here to bring you news, interviews, and information about service dogs and about matters that are of interest to the service dog community.
Thank you for joining us on the Service Dog Show on DV Radio, WDVR.
And welcome to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Gav.
With us today, we have special guest, U.S. Army veteran Ashley Tomberg of Disability Dogs, here to talk to us a little bit about her business and her burgeoning nonprofit. Ashley, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, man. Thanks, guys, for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's our pleasure. Now, I want to make it clear to the audience, this is not something I normally do. I don't generally bring dog trainers on the show unless the show is about specifically about training dogs. Ashley and I had a long conversation after a exchange on a Facebook group in which I asked her some very pointed questions. And the reason she's here is because she answered them and answered them well. So I wanted to bring her on and pick her brain about where she's headed and how she's reaching out to the veteran community. So first of all, Ashley, give us a little bit of background about who you are and where you're from.
So obviously I'm a military veteran. Woo-hoo, toot, toot. I have a TBI and I've had some serious health issues over the years. And I'm a single mom, which has always posed a challenge. It's kind of what ruined my military career. Poor kid. But I grew up with working dogs and whatnot. So, you know, when I got out of the military, I had to find a cause. I went into law enforcement. I got hurt again, sustained an additional traumatic brain injury from blunt force trauma, and pretty much had to restart my entire life. I'd learned to walk, talk, brush my teeth. That was cool. And the cognizant, actually knowing that I had these deficits, but not being able to regulate them really changed the way I viewed the world. So I decided, since I can't do what I want to do anymore, and I'm finally in a position to do what I want, I'm going to change the world one veteran at a time.
Well, that's certainly a excellent goal. You grew up around working dogs, working military, police.
So my uncle is a vet. I shouldn't say was. He is a vet. My aunt bred German Shepherds and my mom bred and trained Jack Russell Terriers. So I was, you know, showing dogs, doing agility. We were hunting dogs. I mean, everything in between, you know, working the police dogs. So I was the junior grand champion in the handler in the country at one point. And then I just had a passion for it. I always liked working with aggressive dogs and understanding the way they thought and worked. And so I kind of grew up, I was, you know, AKC registered dog kennel owner at one point, but I had to deviate from the organization a little bit. Not because I don't think they're right, but they didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm. And that's something we discussed. You and I have discussed prior, is that you know, there's lots of organizations out there helping veterans, but
yeah,
but they don't always match the veteran very. The organization and the veteran don't always match up very well.
So if I can cut you off, one of the big things I noticed, you know, and I, several years ago when I sustained my TBI, one of my TBIs, and I had delayed onset, was I needed a dog. Not that I didn't have the ability to train my own dog, but at that point, I really didn't have the physical capacity to do anything. And I reached out to a ton of organizations. I didn't even apply on a lot of organizations between the information they requested and how invasive they were. I mean, it was paralyzing. And then I finally found a coveted location and I was on a 3 to 5 year wait list. Well, I had finished training one of my dogs. And they called me, no lie, 5 years later and asked me if I was still considering a service dog. It was befuddling. I mean, I just like, what the fuck, for real?
She's not kidding. It's fucking nuts out there when you apply for a service dog.
But what kills me is this, when you need one, you need one.
Yeah,
three, you don't, 6 months, 9 months is one thing, but years is insane.
Yeah, because every organization that I contacted, it was like, we got 3 years, we got 5 years. And I'm looking at them like, you've got to be out of your goddamn mind. Well, you could pay for one and we can get it to you in a couple of days. I mean, what do you mean pay
for
it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, write me a check for 15 grand and I'll have a dog to you in 10 days. But the problem is this. None of these organizations are recognizing the true issue. It doesn't take 2 years to train a service dog. I'm sorry. Because everything you train the dog, you could train a dog to turn on a light switch in 30 days if it's a slow learner. I mean, it took me 30 days to learn how to do it. Can't blame a dog. But everything they train that dog is for that handler. Mm-hmm. There's the disconnect. Those handlers need to bond. They need to facilitate it. They need to learn how to handle a dog.
Right.
And a lot of these guys own dogs that are viable candidates, so they're not perfect. Invest the time and money into those dogs and those people. Give them a sense of pride and partnership again. It just, it makes me crazy. I'm sorry. I'm going to cut you guys off because I'm so passionate about that.
This is what we want.
You're like preaching to the choir. I mean, it's so refreshing to hear somebody who's a professional dog trainer saying exactly the things we say.
Exactly.
Service dog training. I mean, you are preaching to the choir. See, Scav, this is why I wanted to bring her on.
When you told me you were bringing on a dog trainer, I was like, are you out of your fucking mind?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. But well, crazy that I'm going to get on the train and I'm going to drive that bitch, okay? I'm going to drive the train.
Because if you come to my page, I don't know how many times you'll see where I say that straight up, if you're getting, if I would come to you to have a dog trained or you have helped me train my dog, 80% of that training is going to the handler.
Yes.
So you're training my dumb ass to learn the dog.
Mm-hmm.
The dogs pick this stuff up. I'm the dumb ass that needs the help.
But what's even worse is most of these dog trainers, they don't know how to train humans.
Right.
They don't understand. Not only do they not understand, how many of these dog trainers know what it's like to live the fucking struggle? I mean, really, how many of them had to learn to re-walk, talk, you know, deal with the struggle of having panic attacks in public? Fuck, they don't have those challenges. They don't even begin to understand, but they have no problem looking at any one of us and judging us and going, well, I don't know why you can't do that.
Right. So if you're going
to
train me,
let me shoot at you for a hobby and come talk to me, lady. Come on, let's make a party.
So if you're going to train a PTS dog, you better know something about PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Forget knowing it, because knowing it is not enough. I hear people all the time, well, I train dogs and I have an anxiety disorder. I'm like, have you ever been so bad you pissed your pants in Walmart? I'm pretty sure the answer is no.
Yeah, because
have you ever choke slammed your child because they startled you? Pretty sure you're not going to admit to that openly. I have.
Yep,
I mean, I attack people when they wake me up. And this is the reformed version of my sleeping habits. I mean, come on.
You know, and I don't know how many times I've said, you know, my trainer took me into the busiest mall in Pittsburgh during the Christmas season to train Scout. And I just kind of looked at her like, are you fucking insane right now?
But why? That's not real life.
Right. Yeah.
If you're anything like me, I'm going to avoid the mall at Christmas like the plague because I have Amazon. I'm sorry. I'm not too tooting Amazon, but like,
right.
I know I don't have the mental capacity to do it. And I do this for a living and I go out with my service human and a service dog and I still melt down. So
I live out in the country.
Real world application. Real
I live
world.
Out in the country for a reason. I live in small towns for a reason. To catch me in Pittsburgh is probably because I'm coming to see the damn VA. And you'll never catch me in that goddamn mall in the summertime, let alone at Christmas. So why would you put me in that situation? So when I snap and draw a gun, that's
but
on
the bigger
you.
Part is, so here's the biggest part. So not only is it not training you anything, because what happens when your brain kicks into the fight or flight, you have zero retention. You are not learning how to work through a situation. Your dog isn't able to learn how to task because your dog has no idea what's going on because it went from what it knows to this what the fuck moment. So not only are you screwing the handler, you're screwing the dog and you're wasting everybody's time and you're creating a situation that was needless.
Right.
I'm sorry, but that's real.
I'm glad you brought her on.
My bad. I mean,
no, but I think part of why you understand this so well is because you handle the service dog yourself.
I am a handler.
Yeah. You've been there.
I'm a handler. I've got Well, I've got my retired dog right now. I have my aunt who's 100% retired Navy vet who's got some serious health issues. She has a service dog. So in my house, there's usually two or three service dogs. You know, it just, I'm on my fifth dog personally, that, and four of which I've owned or trained. I actually had this wild hair up my ass about a year and a half ago. And I took a dog. I took two dogs to, I don't know how many dog trainers for service dog training. Ate the expenses. And not one of my dogs came out knowing how to do a single freaking tack. I spent thousands of dollars on this experiment, and it blew my mind, all these people. And they charged $5,000, $10,000, $15,000. I shelled out the money because I wanted to see what money bought. And the answer is garbage. Garbage. It doesn't take $35,000 to raise a fucking dog. I'm sorry, it doesn't. I can buy an AKC well-bred dog and train it for $5,000. And that's vet expenses, food. Yeah, okay, so I'm not making money on time. I saw $30,000, $20,000, $40,000. Oh, yeah. These people are crazier than I am. And I have a freaking document that says I'm a danger to myself and others. I want to see their mental health records. This right. is bullshit.
These are the things that Scav and I talk about. This I talk with the director of a fairly large service dog training organization, cooperative training organization. We have this same conversation. Where are these getting these? They getting these ridiculous numbers? $35,000, $25,000 for a dog.
An organization. I looked at one of the biggest veteran serving. Service dog organizations. I'm not going to name them because I'm not that much of a douchebag, but this was the thing that blew my mind.
I will.
86 freaking applicants, 41 dogs in a year, almost $2 million in funds, and 47% of that was fucking salaries.
That is ridiculous. How much of it was overhead for facilities? Is there a breeding program? Where is all this money going? For 35,000 dogs, you know how much is actually being applied to training the dog and matching it?
I actually wrote that number down because I knew this conversation was going to come. Hold on, let me find it. So here's the mind-blowing part. They're quoting 30,000 a dog, and it takes 1 to 2 years to be on the placement list. Right?
Wow.
$1.6 million in expenses between overhead and everything. Do you know all of their dogs are fucking donated? And the estimated their cost for dogs, maintenance, and everything, veterinary, and it's there, ready? Fair market value was $26,000 per dog. And ready? Almost every dime of their vet expenses, food, boarding, everything. It's all donated.
This is a fucking racket.
But it's bullshit.
Yeah, this is racket kind of shit.
Not only that, but in order to even be considered, you have to disclose what caused your PTSD in detail. Are you high? I will tell my therapist that.
And then
I'm gonna sit down and tell my therapist what happened to me in detail. Fuck you.
Then you're not getting a properly bonded dog, you know.
Oh, here's one better. They're allowed to come to your house anytime they want, inspect your house, inspect your dog, inspect everything. And if they don't approve on a person's perspective, they can take your dog away. If for some reason you die, you are required to return the dog. That could be the only living memory somebody has of you.
Wow.
What the fuck is wrong with people?
You knock on my door and don't, if I'm not expecting you, expect a muzzle when you're in your face.
Listen, I love my dogs. I love my dogs more than I love most people. For that matter, I actually like my dogs more than people, which is probably why I train them. And I have a hard time working with regular clients, which is what pushed me to go this direction, because I couldn't live without my dog.
Listen, this is an actual conversation that my son and I had as soon as I walked in this house today. Dad, remember the guy that bought my car? Yes. He's coming over tonight to sell me a keyboard at 9 o'clock. So what do you tell me, Devin? Please don't shoot him.
Yeah.
Because it's somebody that I don't know that's coming after dark.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because, like, even our local police department, they know if you come to my house after dark, I mean, even though I have one of those video doorbells, we're still going to be armed. And it's two women and a child. We're very, very confident, but that's not the point.
You know, my dogs are going to tell me before you even get down halfway down the road. It's just not the point. If I don't know you're coming.
Yeah.
I'm paranoid. It's not really my fault, but you know, when we,
are you paranoid? Paranoid or are you just really aware of what society has to offer?
Well, a little bit of both.
Okay. Fair enough.
You've walked in the same streets that I have probably.
Wouldn't put it past me. I mean, I spent some time in South Miami. I wasn't necessarily was the smartest kid on the block.
But,
you know, and then, I'm about as country as they come and all things considered.
Yeah. And then, you know, you mentioned TBI earlier. And if anybody that's never had a traumatic brain injury, any kind of head injury, I'm going to tell you straight up, it is hard as hell to try to get your body to do anything and your brain not allow you to do it.
I have days I have to consciously tell myself how to walk.
I'm still working on that with my leg. And,
you know, and on that point, though, here's one thing that, you know, a lot of people need to take into account. And for anybody that's listening that, you know, struggling with TBI or even a PTSD issue, you know, if you go to the VA and you see somebody who appears to be worse than you, they may look at you and feel sorry for you because they understand the struggle is real. Like, I will never forget going to the VA and seeing an amputee and being like, well, I feel sorry for myself. And he looked at me and laughed. He goes, the difference between you and me, he goes, I know I don't have legs. You have legs. They just don't work. He goes, I think you're worse off than I am. I will never forget that moment. That was the moment I decided I was going to defy the doctors and walk.
There you go.
Because people don't understand. Like, you feel sorry for yourself. You're like, well, I shouldn't feel sorry for myself. This guy's worse than I am. And you're he told me I was the one who was supposed to be pitied.
You're in one bubble. I'm in another. And we have two different things going on. You know, but...
And it's respect.
We're both disabled. We're both veterans. JJ's got
I'm
his
I'm not disabled.
Bubble. Well...
I am sure as fuck not disabled. I am handy capable, damn it.
There you go.
Even if it's capable of throwing a tantrum.
Differently abled is the term I use. I am differently abled.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, I'm handy capable, even if my capability is just throwing a tantrum today. That's it.
We're only disabled because the VA needs to cut us a check.
Right. Right. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. Man, you get three veterans in the room. Two of the three have TBIs, and we fucking talk about whatever. We don't, you know, this is this is like the service dog version of barracks talk right now, which is fine. I don't have a problem.
Hey, I still have all my clothes on, and we're not playing strip poker, so okay, back to service dog.
Yeah, and there's not a bottle of bourbon sitting in front of me. So, but what I'm saying is that we do want to talk a little bit about what you've got going on with the, you know, training the dogs and where you want to take your business. So nothing wrong with the conversation we're having, but let's get back to the conversation at hand. Disability Dogs is the name of your business, correct?
Correct.
And it's .net, correct?
It's .net, yeah. I was too poor to afford my own domain, so I used a freebie.
Okay. Nothing cool. Wrong with that.
Yeah. But I want to get back to how you want to change. So we identified some of the issues with the service dog training industry, let's call it, the nonprofit industry. Mm-hmm. One which is being that they're collecting millions of dollars in donations for thousands of dollars that actually gets applied to putting a dog in a veteran's hands, which is absolutely ludicrous. You are not if you're somebody who supports these nonprofits, or you're a donor, where's your money going? How far is your dollar traveling when you give it to an organization who's like that, where they're taking in millions of dollars, but they're only spending thousands, versus say a cooperative training organization where they're taking in thousands of dollars and producing hundreds of dogs instead of 41 dogs in a year?
So I can tell you the average salary of the director of all these organizations is between $200,000 and $300,000 a pop.
Holy crap.
I'd be happy if I wasn't funding everything out of my own pocket like I have been for the last year.
Yeah.
So I average about $2,000 to $3,000 in expenses between purchasing dogs, training dogs, vetting dogs, dog food, and not a dime of it do I account for as far as time or what I pay additional dog trainers to help me work a dog. Mm-hmm. But, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 of my own money every month. So every dime I make goes right back into my organization. Yeah. I've donated 4 dogs since Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 3 dogs out that are doing fantastic that were actually, you know, client dogs. It was their own dog, and we've worked with them, and they're learning the fundamentals of tasking, and they're learning the fundamentals of understanding and communicating.
Mm-hmm.
It's so intricate, and the problem is it's cookie cutter for so many people, but it's not one size fits all. Dogs are not one size fits all. I've got a Belgian Malinois, I've got a Rhodesian Ridgeback, and I promise you, they don't learn the same.
Yeah.
Well, you brought that up. Is there any specific place you get your dogs from?
Is there any specific place I get my dogs?
Yes.
For your clients. Not your personal dogs, for your clientele.
For my personal dogs?
No.
They scour the ends of the earth.
Okay. No, but where do you get your dogs for your clientele?
Same way I get my dogs. Okay. I go out of my way to find dogs that meet each individual's client personality, preferences, desires. I've got breeders I work with. I've got, hold on. Justin, if you want to cook dinner, please cook dinner, son. I love you. You know how to work the stove. You got this.
Fantastic.
My son's dangling tortellini in my face. I'm like, sure. Yeah, make it. So the truth is, you know, some people are pro rescue. Okay. Well, I'll scour every humane society I can, and I'll start at the kill shelters. You know, somebody who's really worried about genetics or health or whatever, you know, everything is tailored to the individual, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
If you're going to have a service dog, but your plan is to go duck hunting on the weekend, you know, I'm not going to go find you a pit bull from the shelter because odds are it's going to have a very nice course of duck for dinner,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what people need to understand is you can't cookie cutter dogs. You can't cookie cutter handlers. It doesn't work, you know.
I mean, like I said earlier, you're preaching to the choir. We keep saying this. We hammer on this. This cookie cutter approach to service dogs doesn't work. The person.
And if one more person sings the Fab Fucking Four, I swear I'm going to go run across the street in blindfolds.
Yeah. They're, you know, service dogs can only be blah, 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 blah. No, they can be what works for the handler.
I got a girlfriend. She's getting ready to do the Pony Express, and she's going to take her service dog. It's a 2,000 mile ride on horseback.
Mm-hmm.
You really think she's going to be able to take, I don't know, a boxer
right
to go gallop 2,000 miles over the course of several days? No,
you know,
she's got a Belgian Malinois. I just got going. I mean,
those people just piss me off. You know, just because you have a service dog and you can take a service dog doesn't mean you should take a service dog.
Well, but I think that
go ahead. But this is the kind of dog, this is a dog that works 3 hours in a session because that's her drive. That's her disposition. This is a dog who loves and lives to work.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't place that dog with the guy who wants to go for a walk around the block. It would never work.
No.
You know, it's just like people who go, oh, well, you have to take a poodle if you're going to do balance work. Listen, I know there's a lot of stigma related to just being a service dog handler in general. And I can promise you, I will never, ever, ever own a poodle as my personal dog.
Oh, you know.
I would feel like Cruella De Vil got sidetracked. I mean, it's just wrong.
My favorite example of the pets in Walmart is Fifi the Wonder Poodle. Because it's almost always a shitty little poodle that's terrorizing. Well,
or the flip side is these new designer breeds. They don't even understand what they're doing to the genetics of the dog.
They're not breeding
for, you know, genetics. They're not breeding for disposition. They're breeding, you know, these frilly little things because it's a designer dog. Well, the problem is it's a designer dog. It's not designed to do anything but look cute.
Yep. Yeah, they
and
sit
half
there
of them have health problems and poor disposition. And that's the bottom line.
They're vibrator dogs. They sit there and shake.
Well, maybe I should get one of those then. Do it.
Hold it in your lap. Yeah.
I got I'll just stop there. Mm-hmm. We're not playing strip poker. So here's the other issue. How many of these organizations require somebody to go to them for 13 to 21 weeks? I can't do that, man. I got doctor's appointments. I got a kid. Yeah. I don't know. I can't retain information. If you give me more than a couple of days of information, I'm fried shit. Like, I'm useless.
Right.
Like, you might as well talk to a fucking wall at that point, because it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So why not break down training segments in smaller doses? And quite frankly, if you live in, I don't know, rural Nebraska, your service dog requirements are going to be a whole lot different than the guy I work with out of Tampa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that the dog in Nebraska is not riding the Metro.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's different. You know, I mean, I train Skeeter mostly in Colorado, and we spent a lot of times just in the middle of nowhere. We lived in the middle of nowhere, so malls weren't a thing. So when I did have to go to malls, which doesn't happen, but maybe once a year, we approach it as a training opportunity, because it's not something we do regularly. So if I get my mindset right that we're training, that gets his mindset right. We have a pleasant experience because I can ignore all the idiots because I'm working my dog, you know?
So another aspect you're missing, and this is something that I try to really impress upon a lot of the guys I work with. So one of the cool advantages of having a dog and quote, being in training mode, the fact that I am focused and fixated on, in my mind, almost, it's like I'm getting my dog through this exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the time to be as perceptive to the external stimuli, which means I'm not as likely to have an issue.
Absolutely correct.
Because I've got to benefit my dog. It's my job as a handler to take care of my dog as much as it is his or her job to take care of me.
That is absolutely what I'm getting at, is that because you're focused on working your dog and making sure the dog is successful going through the mall, that's like, I don't go grocery shopping at Walmart. I go training, and groceries get in the cart. So you see,
I find snacks till I go.
Yeah. Where my focus is working my dog, and I do, while we're working, get groceries, but I'm more focused on handling that dog. And that relieves me of the focus of, oh my God, I'm in fucking Walmart, you know? Uh-huh. And we all know Hellmart is Hellmart. I mean, it's one of the worst places for handlers, unless you get your head around, you know, away from, oh my God, I have to go to Walmart, and put your head in the mode of, let's go train. This is the toughest place. This is the most challenging place we can go besides the mall. Let's go train. And then your whole mindset has changed. You're focused on the dog, and you're not worried about the stupid that's all around you. And that, and your, but your dog, because that's what it's trained to do, is watching the stupid for you. It's a win-win situation.
Yeah. I mean, and here's another perspective, right? So, you know, these, like going back to that, those organizations require that you come to them. That's great and all, but you guys are both veterans. You both have issues. How hard is it for you to leave your personal bubble, like your world of environment? You know, it's one of those, like, most of us can stray an hour, maybe two, from home and not have a complete meltdown because we're still close enough to return to base.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, within walking distance if need be.
Yeah.
For me to walk that far requires alcohol, damn it.
If I had to go to Tampa.
How far are you ever away from a bottle, though? Come on now.
Yeah.
Well, I got a bottle of beer in my refrigerator with my name on it when we're done with the podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
But I mean, I'm not even a big drinker, but the reality is so simple. It's, you know, most people, if they're within a reasonable proximity, they've got support systems still relatively close by. And here's the aspect that blows my mind. If we were to put it together, I'm going to pick a random spot, Mamaroneck, New York. I don't know why that came to my mind, but I don't even know where it is on a map. But if I were to set up a group and I solicited veterans from within 2 hours of that general area, maybe three even, right? And we host this big training event. Bring your own dog. If you don't have a dog and you think you want a dog, come meet and greet, hang out. And if you just want an opportunity to learn more about what it's like to have a service dog or how it works, come too. Because A, we all like meeting people from our general area. B, now you're building a support system for other veterans and other handlers. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got dogs that, you know, anybody can handle, you know, and if you're not sure if it's right for you, let's go out and do a public access event. You know, come out. If you can't handle the pressure, then a dog isn't right for you. But yeah. At least you have the know, opposed to the I don't know, or maybe it would, or hell, I never thought this would work. But this is the best thing since sliced bread or pound cake and MRE. But that's the thing. So it's building the community, because a lot of these organizations, well, they won't give you a dog because you can't provide a list of three people that'll automatically take that dog. Well, hell, I don't know three people I like or trust enough with my dog. Right. But I know two dog trainers. I know another service dog handler I turn my dog over to. She's 3 hours away. She would drop anything and come get my dog if I called her. And that's the difference, is it's building the support system within. And that's what not one of these organizations do. Not one of them figure out how to bring these guys together, girls together, and work with them. Or they go, well, you're not a combat vet. You're not qualified. Oh, you didn't. You can't possibly have PTSD.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, listen, we'll get into that in just a few minutes. We have to take a quick break, folks. When we get back, we'll talk about why the organizations are problematic and how Ashley's trying to change the whole way it works. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to the Service Dog Show on DV Radio, WDVR.
DV Radio.
On February 5th, the Department of Transportation published a set of proposed rule changes for air travel with service dogs in the Federal Register. This 94-page document is complex, but could have an adverse effect on the lives of every disabled handler of a task-trained service dog, as well as the disabled owners of emotional support animals. The future of equal rights for disabled people as we know it could be jeopardized by some of these proposed rule changes. As stakeholders, it is in the best interest of all disabled people to register their comments on this NPRM before the deadline of April 6th, 2020. Please go to the regulations.gov website, search for the notice titled Traveling by Air with Service Animals, and click on the Comment Now link in the upper right corner to make your voice heard. Remember to be polite and professional so that your comment will be registered. Together, we can ensure that the voices of disabled handlers of task-trained service dogs are heard.
DV Radio.
What's DV Radio?
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DVRadio now. That's patreon.com/DVRadio.
Radio.
Shooters Express is Charlotte's number one destination for all personal defense, sport, instruction, and recreational shooting supplies. They offer concealed carry classes for only $29.95. That's only $29.95 for concealed carry classes. And if you're military or law enforcement, you'll receive great deals and be eligible for even more at Shooters Express. So head over to Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina, or visit shootersexpress.com for more information and monthly deals. That's Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina.
This is not a paid endorsement from Shooters Express and is provided solely by DV Radio free of charge.
Let's get it on.
We've got some food bread made for you.
The music.
Let's go.
You're listening to WDVR on DVRadio.net. By veterans, for veterans.
Simply made for you.
And welcome back to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Scav.
With us is Ashley Tomberg of Disability Dogs. And as you heard during the first half of the show, she's an experienced dog trainer. She is a service dog handler herself, disabled Army veteran, disabled police veteran,
Open up the can of worms.
And yeah. So let's dig into that.
I'm just a fabulous hot mess. Okay. We'll get on with it. I'm a hot mess. I make being a mess look good. Okay.
Well, let's dig into that can of worms a little bit. What
open it.
What were the worms? I've lost what the worms were.
So the worms were how I plan to change the organizational structure of service dogs. Yeah. I got this. I wrote it down. I cheated.
There you go. You are cheating. Damn it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I told you before the show, man. We don't write shit down.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, you want to change the whole organization model. So tell me what your plan is. What's your idea? Where is Disability Dogs heading?
Okay. Well, my first step is I'm trying to come up with the rest of the money to do my official 501, whatever the hell the rest of it is, something 19. I got that part.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to become a not-for-profit, which is no big deal. I actually just put a deposit down on a toy hauler to transport dogs all around the U.S. And a shout out to a huge freaking awesome car deal on a brand new truck to pull this trailer from Alpaca Ford. Never seen anybody give up a truck so nice or so cheap in my life. But I bought a truck and a trailer. I refinanced my house, and I'm going to take service dog training mobile.
Really?
I want to come to people. Mm-hmm. Because I remember being paralyzed at the idea of leaving home for very long or very far.
Yeah.
I have goosebumps just talking about it. I mean, I remember the just being destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you straight up, if you come to North Carolina or West Virginia, you got places to stay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I can almost guarantee.
I got a house on tires.
Well, we can throw you extension cords and hoses.
I'm in. Set it up. I'll come. As soon as I get the truck and trailer on my way back, I won't stop. I won't have any dogs with me. But I'll stop and do a free clinic. No questions asked.
And I know enough people around this country that we could probably set you up just about anywhere you go.
So that's my goal is, so I'm supposed to have the truck trailer. Hopefully I'll have the funding for the nonprofit finished by the end of March. Starting in April, my goal is to set my first three clinics up. Hopefully I'll have enough applicants to pick two or three locations. My goal is to go straight up the East Coast. In April, I've got a dog trainer who's volunteered to take several weeks off of their own company to come with me to help. So that's what I want to do. I want to do April, you know, go up the East Coast. May, schedule stuff, maybe it's a little bit closer to Florida, Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi. I want to do something that way. And then come summer, my goal is to drive from Florida all the way across the country. I've got one event already pre-scheduled in Nebraska, and I'm working on putting one together in Washington State.
Cool.
Fantastic. Cool. Yeah, folks, if you're listening to this, make sure you give her a heads up. Let her know if you can help her out or if you've got a place that you can set her up.
Host it.
And this is I like where you're thinking of and where you're going. And I like that the whole point is to empower the veterans, give them the knowledge and empower them to continue with their dogs themselves. I mean, and that's really what you're doing is you're giving a dog to the veteran that's got the very basics and teaching the veteran how to handle the dog and how to get the dog to, you know, train the dog to do the tasks they need together with the veteran. And that's, right. I mean, this is what, I mean, Scav and I, we hammer this almost every show.
We get questions every single day.
Yeah.
So I want to take this a step further, though. You're selling this project, sure. So my goal is to establish a group of dog trainers, which I already have a good number of them invested with me, mm-hmm. so that we're available. So you can call me via Skype, FaceTime, whatever, you know, schedule it. Go, hey, Ashley, this is the situation. This is what's happening. Let me show you. Hey, man, this is something simple, you know, adjust your hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, help you fix the problem as close to real time as possible. Hey, you know, your dog is getting distracted. Here's some different options as far as focus work. You know, my dog won't walk in a leash anymore for whatever reason. Well, what's going on? What's happening before? What's happening after? And the foundation is don't get angry. Get creative.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yeah. You just did it in a can of worms.
And it's not by yourself. You're no longer alone because what works for one doesn't work for another. What works for one dog doesn't work for another. What works for a handler, You know, I was that soldier. You could smoke me till I hit muscle failure. I fell and broke my nose. And I thought that shit was funny.
Mm-hmm.
But if I respected you and you told me you were disappointed in me, oh my God, my tail is stuck. I mean, dogs are no different than people.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the fat kid, man. You told him to do a push-up and he was on the verge of tears. We all have our kinds. So it's finding a way to match a dog with a handler in the right option. And if I don't have the right dog for you, I have a dog you can work while you're with me. And I will do everything in my human power to find the right match. But just because I don't have the dog today doesn't mean I won't have it next month.
Right, right.
You know, I have an 8-person tent to take with me. So if you can't find a way to get close, camp. I got you.
You know, you're kind of taking more of a grassroots approach to it rather than this big formal, well, we got to have a facility and we got to, there's a breeding program and the CEO and the blah, 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 blah. No, no,
no.
This is not what you're doing here. You are taking your knowledge and sharing it openly and bringing other trainers with their knowledge and sharing it openly in order to empower the veterans. And that's, you know, we were talking about the organizations earlier, you know, first half of the show and the cookie cutter concept with service dogs. And what none of these cookie cutter organizations realize is they don't know jack about what their clientele, the veterans, need. They just know, we think that a service dog should be this, 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 and this. Okay, good for you. But when you put that leash in the hand of that veteran, that's not what that veteran needs.
Here's a perfect example. Most of these organizations, 90% of the dogs they give out are labs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can train a lab with the best of them, I guess, two, whatever. But I'll tell you what, me personally, I don't particularly like labs. Their goofy disposition is annoying. It's like the perky morning person. They drive me nuts. That doesn't make them a bad dog, but it's just not a good fit for me on a personal level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Every one of my personal service dogs are Malinois. I love them. They're great. They're not for everybody.
Yeah.
But if it's somebody trying to get their
Malinois, I mean.
Well, but not just that, but you know, I got Malinois that are, you know, I got one who's pretty much convinced his favorite place in the world is the couch.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets up for food and he'll work for treats. Yeah. I mean, so it's not, I don't believe in generalizations. I've got that blonde Malamute, which I know you can appreciate. You know, I've got a blonde Malamute. She's adorable. You know, and she's always talking, and it drives me crazy. Again, not a breed I would own personally. But there's somebody who's going to appreciate that stubborn, hard-headed nature of hers, where she pushes back. You push on her, she pushes back. You ask too much, she gives you, you know, what for.
Yeah.
That's the reality, is matching dogs with people.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, when I trained Skeeter, it's because I needed a dog that could stand up to me. Because, you know, and that's something people don't think about and they don't realize. Look, when you've got the PTSD and you're constantly on the edge of fight or flight, you need a dog that's going to be able to stand up to you if you go fight or if you go flight. You need a dog that's going to be able to say, stop, you know?
You've got to have a dog that's resilient enough to handle how, you know, I got a friend. I just took his German Shepherd over for a little bit. You know, when he has PTSD and I'm sure many of us can appreciate, has some slightly violent tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of burned on his service dog because, you know, he would harshly correct the dog when the dog was tasking. Well, the dog got frustrated. So the dog came to me and spent 2 weeks out in my yard playing as a dog, you know. And we went back to playing things like tug and whatnot. This way, when he got aggressive with him, the dog was like, oh, it's a game. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's this whole fixed context of how a service dog should be. It's bullshit.
Yeah, right.
It's like saying, you know, it's like saying because I'm a female from the military, I'm supposed to be a dyke. Well, no, not knocking them, but I'm not.
Yeah, and that's just it, is that, you know, the cookie cutter programs have this image of quite frankly, they've based the behavior that they expect of service dogs on the seeing eye dog, which is a fairly robotic behavior. Well, a medical alert dog, which is really what a PTSD service dog is, doesn't.
They're dynamic.
Yeah, they interact much more in depth with their handler than a seeing eye dog does. I mean, the seeing eye dog's, you know, interaction to most degree is go this way, don't go that way. Stop.
Yeah.
That's the interaction. Whereas, you know, Skeeter, God, if that's all I got from Skeeter, we'd be miserable. We'd be miserable because he wouldn't be picking up on what's going on in my head and turning around and looking at me and say, and you know, as if to say, hey, you pay attention to where your head's at? How about you pay attention to where I'm at? And, you know, redirecting me, you know, I mean, it's just, they got this robotic behavior and they don't understand the concept of alerting. And
but more importantly, none of those people have the struggle. They don't even know. So when the dog goes to a handler, you know, I'm sorry, but when my PTSD kicks up, yes, I've been known to self-mutilate by scratching massive holes in my body. Mm-hmm. You know, so they teach the dog when you scratch to put a paw. Well, you put your paw on me when I'm scratching, I'm probably going to swat you. I'm not going to just push you. Like, no, I'm going to swat you because I'm real. I got issues. Okay? But my Malinois, I start getting anxious before I ever get to scratching. That bitch has got me pinned to the ground like it's a WWE event.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I need because I disregard tasking. I'm probably the worst handler for a service dog because I ignore my dog. So my dogs all have to be pushy and obnoxious. They're going to be like, hey, bitch.
Escalate. Yeah. I mean, that's just.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, but see, again, what we're talking about, and we're going back to the fundamental difference from the cookie cutter concept to the cooperatively trained concept or owner trained concept. We're talking about the difference between a dog that is proactive, sees you losing it, dissociating, and tries to stop that from happening, and a dog that's reactive.
Reactive and
you're scratching holes in your arm. Now I have to do something, you know, rather than trying to keep you from doing it in the first place. And they don't, the cookie cutter organizations don't understand that concept.
No.
That you can train, that if the dog is with the veteran, you can train the dog to pick up on what's going on with the veteran and respond as a stimulus rather than, okay, well, your arm's bleeding now, so I should do something. How about, I can smell the changes in your, you just had an adrenaline dump. Something's going on. Maybe I need to pay attention.
Yep.
You know, you're,
well, here's one better.
Dopamine, or not dopamine, you're,
endorphin.
Endorphin level just rose. I can smell the change in and I can hear your, hear your pulse rating.
Yeah.
You know,
here's one better. Here's one better. So all these training facilities are in it. Most of them have this gorgeous indoor building and, you know, they work in a group and everybody goes for a walk around the circle. Everybody stops and goes to a sit heel. I'm sorry, but I have never in real world application had that opportunity to work my dog in a PetSmart.
Yeah.
It's just not real life.
Yeah.
You know, Home Depot, I can't tell you how many dogs, one of my dogs has had to dodge a freaking shopping cart because people don't pay attention. That's real life.
Yep. Yep.
Or the drive-by petters, the people you want to absolutely slap the fuck out of. Because can I pet your dog? No. And the minute you turn your head, they go to pet your dog.
Yeah. And it's like, well, it's illegal for me to slap you now.
Yeah.
But that's another thing though. Okay. So I can't remember. It was a few months ago and I'm reading comments. There's a photo of, I remember a certain personality posted a photo of a veteran and her service dog in a grocery store. And I was reading the commentary because this I was pissed. I mean, this guy was a fucking jackass about it. And I was very disappointed because he has a large following. Anyway, somebody commented, well, it can't be a real service dog because it didn't sit when she stopped. And I'm like, the fuck? Now, let me tell you, Skeeter does not sit when I stop in most grocery stores. Walmart, Food Lion is a chain we have here.
Because they're still working.
Well, no. The floor is slippery. And he puts his rump down and his ass starts sliding.
I just thought it was the boys never wanted to sit because their balls would get cold. My bad.
No, his ass starts sliding. He's got to dance and tippy-tap his front feet and try to keep in a sitting position. He will lie. Like, if I'm sitting here reading labels, he'll lie down because he's not sliding. But he can't, there's no traction. His ass just widened across the floor, which is why he doesn't like to sit in the grocery store. It's not.
Here's a better question. Why do they have to sit when they're in the grocery store? Why do they have to sit?
Right. Yeah. Says who? Why do exactly?
Well, it's just
why
like,
do they have to sit?
You know, you and I have this whole debate over training devices. You know, I told you I have a service dog that only works in a pinch collar. It's not because the dog is bad or disrespectful. It's because the handler has such physical limitations that they need to be able to control a 100-pound dog, no questions asked, within their physical limitations.
Mm-hmm.
But it's taking the time to teach the handler how it works, how it's applied, how to use it,
mm-hmm.
how to do proper corrections. People don't have to have a one-size-fits-all.
No.
Now,
no.
Do I think everybody should work in a pinch collar? Hell no. Yeah. Most dogs should be fully capable of, but it's that also that whole, well, if it doesn't work in a flat collar, it's not trained. Well, I have a Mallee. You put her in a flat collar and she thinks it's time to play a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She wears jewelry. It's time to go to work. I mean,
you got to train the dog in front of you. And that's a debate I don't have. I know what worked for me, and I was able to train an Alaskan Malamute, a dog bred to pull, not to pull,
yep.
without any corrective devices. But I got inside his head because I had the knowledge and the ability to do that. Not everybody can. I grew up around these dogs my whole life, understood.
But you also have the physical capability if, God forbid, your dog reacted poorly to manage the situation.
Oh, absolutely.
Not everybody does.
I also know the dirty trick with Malamutes and Huskies, which is grab their collar, pull their front feet off the ground, and they've lost all their power. And it does not.
Yep.
This breed, their necks are so heavy, you're not choking them. Some of them are drama queens and they'll go, but they're actually not choking.
Or they scream.
Yeah, but they're not being harmed in any way, shape, or form. But that's just a trick because I grew up around sled dogs, mush dogs. You know, that's something I learned, mushing dogs. This is how you move these dogs around without them pulling you off your feet and dragging you through the tundra. You pick their
feet. Oh, come on. That sounds like fun.
Lose all the power. Oh, it's fun if you're on the sled. When you fall off the sled, you're hanging on for dear life. Let me tell you.
I'm good. It sounds really cold there. I'm out.
Oh, yeah. Snow piling down down into your coat and down your pants. And
I think I would rather catch hot breath and like cleavage. I'm good.
Yeah, it's not fun. It is not fun. But at
but
same
that point, goes back to it's all kinds of kind.
Well, and that's just the thing is, look, everybody's experience with dogs, and there's another thing I want to talk about the goddamn cookie cutter fucking organizations. Is
not everybody knows how to walk a dog?
Yeah, not only that's just it. They're aiming at putting dogs into the hands of people who they presume has never held a leash in their life. And you know what?
Yep.
You might have to train a robotic cookie cutter dog for that person. But
happy to
most,
do it.
Most of the time, those people aren't going to be looking for a dog because they don't understand what a relationship with a dog can do for them. And that's the thing that, I mean, it's like these organizations promise this plug and play experience, which isn't realistic in any way, shape or form. Like they're training dogs for people who don't know what holding a leash is like.
Well, here's one better. And I want to put this in a different perspective. Oh, shit. Hold on. Let me see if I can bring it back. You're talking about, people not knowing how to hold a leash.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the reality. It's beautifully presented, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have trained dogs. I grew up with dogs. I go to some of these places and I look at their training manuals and I listen to this stuff. And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, I think I'm going to hang myself. I think I'd rather sit through another EEO death by PowerPoint from the military. I'm sorry, but you have to cater to the environment in which you're working. You know, it's the other side of the fence where organizations sit there and go, I won't help you train your dog. Why not? Well, the dog does poor in public. Well, here's a magic question. Does the veteran only need the dog at home, or is he planning on doing public access? If he's never going to take the dog out in public, I don't give a shit if the dog doesn't know how to behave in public.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
If that veteran uses that dog to disrupt their nightmares, calm them in panic attacks, and they only have the dog at home, if the dog's a little dog aggressive, we'll teach the dog. Here's some extra. Most people have never taught their dogs how to be polite in public. They don't get taught how to be social, how to be respectful of other animals, because they never have the opportunity presented due to the inabilities of the handler to do it. So let's change it.
Let's start giving the handlers those tools. Absolutely. And that's just, I mean, I've seen so many horror stories about programmed dogs, and where, one of the large programs, not the large program we were talking about earlier, but another of the large programs, you go to their facility for 3 weeks. The first week is spent trying to match you going between dog to dog to see if there's a spark of some kind. Okay. And if there's not, sorry, none of these dogs
that's wrong.
Go home. So the second week is spent just working on the basic leash work. Just walking around, sit, stay, down. That's it. The third week is public outings. And that's it. They don't teach them about the law. They don't teach them about their rights. Veterans don't understand that they have the right to handle a service dog to assist with their disability, and it's protected by the ADA. They think it's a privilege. These organizations.
You know, one of my only requirements is going to be. You know, one of my only requirements for a dog to be placed or somebody to participate in my program.
What?
To spend a whopping $7 on your digital book and having read it prior to training.
I like that. Not because it pays me. Not because I get money out of it. I like that priority.
No. Because it's important. Because now I can skip all the bullshit and go over it real quick.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you're going to have to make a PowerPoint for me so I can play it.
Yeah, I can do that. We'll work on a PowerPoint. I'll be glad to help you with that. See, people don't realize I'm not out here trying to make money with the book. I'm trying to teach veterans, because part of the reason I wrote the book is because I saw these veterans with programmed dogs who had no fucking clue.
Dude, there was no fucking book. There was nothing.
Yeah. I mean, the book didn't exist, so I wrote it.
But here's the thing. It's not that I won't lie. I skimmed through it because I have a hard time reading comprehension because of my brain injury. Now, I did make my aunt read it and tell me, the Cliff Notes version of what I would appreciate, what I would probably not appreciate. But here's the reality. It has the meat and potatoes of what people need to know. Bingo. And here's the reality. I'm guessing you're like me. Every freaking dime I make off of something is going right back into doing something to benefit the people I fucking vowed to protect.
Exactly. I mean, I haven't even made a profit on the book yet. I haven't what it cost me to publish it.
But you're still reinvesting the money right back into what we're doing.
Yeah. Every time I make something, it goes right back in. It goes to, towards paying for the broadcast software I do for live. It, goes for equipment. It goes, everything goes right back.
You want to hear the craziest part? You want to hear the craziest part of my whole plan?
Yeah.
At $3,000 a month in donations, I will be able to afford. I won't have a penny to spare, and I won't be going completely bankrupt out of my own pocket. At $3,000 a month in donations, I will be able to do at least two seminars a month if I have the applicant.
Nice.
At $5,000 a month, I can actually afford to guarantee I have a second trainer with me every time I go, which means I can break it down to the guys that have experience, the guys that don't have experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people don't understand. I'm asking people to walk away from their own businesses to contribute to this.
And they're saying yes.
Do you know what one of my number one obedience trainer, the person I use for all my basic people when people have no idea, because she's so patient and she's so good. And she's bilingual, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what she's asking for? $500 a trip.
Nice.
To cover her lost income.
Nice.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
So at $5,000 a month, I can afford to have every dog vetted as frequently as I might need. At $5,000 a month, I can afford, to eat while I travel.
Right.
Strange concept. And I can go further. Mm-hmm. I can go to the West Coast and work for, 2 months. Yeah. My plan is to be in a position by this summer, I can pack up my personal dogs and my client dogs and my service dogs that are, going to be started. I've got people who I got to pay their dog food bill so they'll raise dogs for me. Mm-hmm. That's the catch these people are asking for. Ashley, can you pay for the damn food? Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to be able to put out 10 dogs a month. I don't think people understand how many hundreds of hours goes into a dog. Every dog has anywhere between 100 and 400 hours of public access alone.
Yep. That's the
I won't let a dog leave.
Public access.
So you know what's the number one reason all these fucking organizations wash out dogs?
Public access.
Well, the dog with it slipped. Well, because you didn't teach him how to handle himself. You didn't do the work at home, so he's going to act like an asshole in public.
Yeah.
Or dogs are afraid to slick floors. Well, take the time. Build the confidence. Train them.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Peter was afraid of automatic sliding doors. First time I tried to take
You were telling me. I love that story.
So what did I do? We just came to the parking lot, you know, and the parking lot was positive. Oh, I could sniff and pee. Then we went closer to the front. And we stopped, like, you know, we stopped 50 feet away from the door, let him sniff, he's comfortable. It took me, what did I tell you, a month, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
But, you know, step by step until he figured out it was a game that,
I
step here, the door opens. Oh, hey, that's funny. That's cool. And all of a sudden he was playing. So the door was positive. Look, if I go over here, the door opened. Look at that, Dad. Look at that. He, to this day, he loves going to the automatic doors. Because he figured out that he makes the door open, you know, exposure, it's patience. And these organizations' excuse will be, well, we don't have the time to invest in the dog like that. What the fuck are they doing for two years? And you're going to put these dogs that you don't have time to invest in into the hands of veterans whose lives depend on these dogs. How does that even make sense?
You know, that's the thing. I mean, I laugh. I did the math, you know. Okay, I'm no mathematician, but $5,000 a month to have a completely mobile dog training service for service dogs is unheard of.
Yep. But you know what? And when you're not paying all this overhead and salaries, you know, and all this, when you're not paying for the organization, you're just paying for the dogs, you can do it that low.
Here's the mind-blowing part. I have high-end breeders who have all made a commitment to me that if this goes forward and we have the interest, they will all do what's called a hosted litter annually.
Nice.
Dogs that are $2,500 a piece, they will sell me for it at no more than $1,000.
Nice.
These are, you know, German imported Rottweilers, German imported freaking German Shepherds. I mean, I got a guy who's willing to give me a litter of labs.
Nice.
I hear all these people, oh, I need a service dog. I need a service dog. I'm standing here going, I got dogs. Mm-hmm. I'm about to have a whole hell of a lot more. Mm-hmm. I don't have a way to get to you yet. I'm getting ready to drive to Salt Lake City in 3 weeks to go pick up this freaking car hauler.
Nice.
Or this toy hauler. Nice. So I can house 10 dogs. The next project is I got to figure out how to come up with the money out of my own pocket because I don't let my dogs ride in regular crates because I don't think it's safe enough. All my dogs are in FAA approved crates to be transported because their safety is paramount.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I'm begging a friend to come weld freaking modified dog paddocks together for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll have $100,000 of my own money tied up in this project by the end of next month.
I
don't know how much more commitment I can show the community I have in this project. I literally refinanced my house. I'm trading in my paid off truck. That's a beautiful vehicle. There's nothing wrong with it. My aunt's trading in her car on a camper on this toy hauler. My whole family is invested. I mean, I'll have over $100,000 just tied up in that. Talking about what we are already giving up. And I'm in. All you got to do is ask for help.
Well, Ashley, where can people get a hold of you both to support you and to ask for help?
Well, disabilitydogs.net. My phone number is 352-281.
Let's not put your phone number out on the air. You'll get calls from Russia.
disabilitydogs.net. Go to my website. Go to my Facebook page. Go to my Twitter. Go to my Instagram. If you're a website guru, you want to help me put my website back together because I'm technologically retarded, please hook us up. Whatever, every little bit helps. If you want to host a GoFundMe and ask all your friends for $1 apiece, $1 makes a difference. Like, God, I sound like one of those tree hugging like UNICEF commercials.
Give up that unicorn fairy dick juice from Starbucks for one morning a week for a month.
I'm gonna donate. I'm gonna buy me a Siberian tiger now.
I mean, I mean, literally, I don't know what else I can do beyond what I'm doing. I put out 15 dogs last year.
Nice.
Three of them went to domestic abuse victims. Two of them went to sexual assault victims. Four of them went to veterans, and I don't remember who the last one is off the top of my head. I think that's 10. And then there's a few others that I gave one or two to autistic kids because I had them. Right. And I can only have so many dogs at my house, so I had too many dogs. Here, take a dog. I have people who make donations when I give them dogs. All it does is allow me to buy another dog.
Yep, exactly, exactly. Well, we're about out of time, so check out Ashley at disabilitydogs.net, Disability Dogs on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well?
Yes.
Okay, so...
My 12-year-old set it up. I got this.
We've told you where to find them. So check it out, and do what you can to support. Ashley, we're going to come back to you in a few months, maybe towards the end of the summer. I want to check in with you, get you back on the show and see how it's going and see how what your progress is and where this nonprofit's at. I like your idea. You're definitely, I mean, like I said earlier, you're preaching to the choir as far as, you know, in regards to the organizations, and you're seeing and saying the exact same things we're seeing and saying.
Yeah, we all...
You know, and for some people, they're right, but not for all of us.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
And that's the problem is, you know what? These big organizations think that we all fit into these nice little egg cartons, and guess what? We fucking don't.
No.
So stop treating us that way, and stop trying to train dogs that way for us, because guess what? It's not what we need. That's not what the disabled veterans need. You're telling us what we need instead of asking us. And guess what? We don't fucking need to shit you're shelling out. That's that's just the brutal, honest truth. That's not what we need.
Yep. Exactly.
Well, thank you very much.
I appreciate you guys so much.
Gotcha. Yeah. I really appreciate having you on.
Sorry about that's my it. Rant.
That's okay. It's all good. Look, this is life. This is how we are. This is, you know, we have to be, we just got to be us. We're not putting on a show. We're just sharing what we know. We're just sharing our knowledge and experience.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm trying to give it out to as many people as want it.
You betcha. You've been listening to Service Dog Show right here on DV Radio, WDVR. Before we go, we want to remind you the deadline to comment on the Department of Transportation's notice of proposed rule change regarding air travel with service dogs is March 22nd. Go to dot.gov and comment. Please be polite. Please don't use those tasty four-letter veteran words, but do let your voice be heard. The disabled community, service dog handlers, we're going to get mowed over if we don't make sure that our voices are heard by commenting on the DOT website, dot.gov. Look for the notice of proposed rule changes for flying with service dogs. In the upper right-hand corner of that page, there's a link. It's a blue box that says comment here. Click that and put in your comment. If you need help with links, please message Scaven Scout Chronicles, message PTS Dog. We'll get you the links. We'll put you in the right place so that you can register your comment with the Department of Transportation before the new rules go into effect. Thanks for listening right here on DV Radio, WDVR.
DV Radio.